broadcasting worldwide from a studio inside global headquarters of RP Enterprises in Kansas City.
Hey, gang!
Ladies and gentlemen,
Papa's home!
This is the Papa Ron Podcast.
File transfer in progress.
With Ronnie Phillips and Jillian Gregg.
Showtime.
All right, we're back. Episode 44. Thanks for hanging along. And don't forget that you can get a video version of this podcast on Spotify and YouTube. It can be found on any of your favorite podcast platforms. And we would love for you to follow us on all of our social platforms, be it Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, giving you regular updates, giving you snippets of all of our guests as they come in. I'm excited for today's guest. We've had him on before. I'm trying to remember what episode it was. Maybe like episode 25. He is a big-time farmer, he's a serial entrepreneur, and now he's a celebrity in the sense of a reality TV star. Welcome back to the Papa Ron Podcast, Stephen McBee! Yeah,
thank you very much for the introduction. It's a little bit overstated, I guess. I don't know about a reality star in any shape.
What? But, what?
Well, about to be.
We'll see. We'll see. Fingers crossed, at least.
We're within hours, right? I mean, technically.
It's coming down to it. Yeah, we're less than a week away.
Yeah.
I remember the last time you were here, you had told me, and it was, of course, you know, kind of on the DL, that you were going to be working on potentially releasing a TV show that would be similar to Yellowstone. Is that fair to say?
That is correct, yes.
Okay, so how did this all come about?
Yeah, so the whole reason I went on Joe Millionaire was not to find a wife. Full disclaimer.
Which, by the way, he explains all of that in the last podcast. If you haven't heard that, you need to go listen to it.
Yeah, so we talked about that last time. My entire goal with Joe Millionaire was because I thought with my family and I's portfolio of businesses, we had an interesting story to tell. And I wanted to get a production company in-house to take a look at what we've got going on. There's a lot of similarities with Yellowstone, obviously it being the number one show on air, you know, at that time and still currently is whenever it'll air here its last season. I knew that there was potential for that. And obviously, I got more than I bargained for on the dating show. I ended up with Kala, and we're still doing great, which is pretty neat.
Yeah, we're going to get into that because I got a lot of questions about that.
Last time we were here. It's the ups and downs. This is why there's a reality show about my life.
Okay.
It's never consistent, I guess. But so came out to my farm whenever we had the top five or six women and saw everything that we had going on and really... It's a small world in the reality TV side of things over there in Hollywood. And once you get into that small group, it's like you know everyone. And so we had a lot of different production companies that reached out to me after Joe Millionaire ended its final episode of airing and talked about doing the show. And so then it came down to choosing the right production company that we felt like was going to be a good fit for us, that was going to allow us to show who we are authentically and was going to put our best interests at heart. A lot of times you have production companies that'll do a sleight of hand and they'll come out there and film you, tell you, hey, this is going to be great for you and your family, but they have ulterior motives, right?
Sure.
And so we felt really, really good about this production company that we signed on with, Jeff Jenkins Productions. Actually did the first 10 seasons of Keeping Up with the Kardashians, Bling Empire, a bunch of other really solid shows. And whenever they came out and talked to us, they just told us about what to expect. We shot our pilot episode. They were going to take it back to the different networks to see who was interested in bidding on it. We really didn't know what to expect. We thought we had a good story to tell, but at that point, it was all up in the air. And within a couple months, Jeff Jenkins Productions came back and said, you won't believe this, but we have offers from basically every single network in Hollywood right now. And so now it's a decision between us as the production company, you as a family, like where do you want to see yourself on TV? What network is going to be the best representation of who you guys are and has the best long-term potential? And NBCU ended up being the one that we chose to go with because they believed in the story we had to tell and they believed in the long-term potential of what we could be. So if you look at a Netflix, you're looking at maybe three seasons tops.
Okay.
And that's even if you're a hit show. Like, they just don't keep seasons running very long. They want brand new content constantly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so we're like, okay, who could we partner with from a network perspective that would want to see this thing through, like, run this thing till the wheels fall off?
Right.
And NBCU said, hey, we'll do this for 10 years plus if you guys are still pulling in the viewers.
Right.
And so we're like, hey, let's do it.
No pressure.
Wow. All right. No there's a lot there. All right. So I'm from a technical standpoint, being that I play in the TV game with having Heartland Waterfowl, I'm going to try to get some clarity because what we do on the water, and I'm not trying to make this about me, so I apologize, but I'm trying to understand, you hire a production company. They then manage the entire deal. Is that correct?
So actually, the production company, we did not hire the production company. Production company came out, shot a pilot. We had a bunch of different production companies pitching us.
Okay.
And we said, okay, we feel good about Jeff Jenkins Productions.
So you had the opportunity to interview a variety of production companies.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
Then you choose them. Mm-hmm. And then from there, you don't have any involvement as far as negotiating with the variety of networks?
We have very little involvement. We don't negotiate directly with the networks. We have Jeff Jenkins Productions, who would come back and say, okay, here's what Netflix offered, here's what NBC you offered, here's what Discovery, History, Hulu, Amazon, here's what everyone's offer was, here's what we think the best move would be, and they would advise us based on their experience in the network world. They work with all of them. They're not exclusive to any single network.
Right.
They'll sell the show to anyone. Mm-hmm. And after talking with them, we felt really, really solid about NBCU, and to this day, still feel really good about the decision. So
the difference in between what you're doing and what we're doing on the outdoor space is that if we hire a production company, in this case Heartland Waterfowl hires Heartland Bow Hunters, the production company, and then it's on me as Heartland Waterfowl and the owner to then go sell it. We have to buy the airtime from the network. We have to get the spot. We have to sell the sponsorship.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
In this particular case, I'd like for you, to whatever level of comfort you have, explain the variety of different offers and what that looks like.
Yeah, so Jeff Jenkins Productions had the exclusive idea for the show. So the outline of the show, that pilot episode, they created a sizzle reel, similar to what you guys do with Heartland Waterfowl, and would send it off to the different networks. The networks then would then bid on that show. Who would buy it from Jeff Jenkins Productions? Mm. Within that bid price would also be the price for production. So all the offers were pretty competitive when it comes to actual monetary value. And so we started looking at a perspective of, okay, Netflix obviously has the largest audience, but we know they don't go very long for seasons on new shows. We know that if we were to sign with Netflix, we won't film until a year from now, and then it'll be a released maybe a year and a half from then.
Mm.
So we're looking at 2.5 years out.
Sure.
I'm not getting any younger. So,
yeah.
You know, I was trying to take advantage of things as fast as we could.
Yeah.
And then NBCU, the trajectory of Peacock, obviously with Peacock having some of the NFL playoff games, feel really good about the subscriber growth of Peacock.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the whole NBC umbrella. You know, obviously they have Bravo, E, USA Network. They have a bunch of different networks.
So there's cross promotion there.
Correct. Correct.
That's awesome.
And so that's why we decided, along with Jeff Jenkins, we felt really solid about NBCU.
Hmm.
What is the trajectory of Peacock? And I knew that, and the reason I bring this up was because there was a big uproar when the Chiefs were going to play a playoff game
People
on Peacock.
Lost their
now,
minds.
Luckily,
so mad that they had to download
so
Peacock.
Unless you were in that market. Mm-hmm. So was that the Dolphins game? I can't remember which Chiefs game it was, but either way,
it was the
game would air live on the NBC network for those teams in those markets.
Mm-hmm.
So Kansas City and maybe Miami. Outside of that, you had to download or subscribe to the platform.
Mm-hmm.
So is this, what was it that they told you? Because there's a lot of different platforms out there and people are getting irritated with, like, okay, I got to get a subscription to YouTube and get a subscription to Netflix and get a subscription out of Peacock. And there's all the, and then before you know it, it's adding up to being what it would have cost to have cable TV or satellite.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So what kind of peace of mind did you have with the model that Peacock was building, that you chose them over all of the other digital platforms?
Yeah, we liked a lot of the original content and some of the leftover content that Peacock was buying. So Yellowstone was obviously airing on some NBCU networks. They were buying some of the reruns of Yellowstone. They were buying a lot of the different shows that have been hit shows over the years that were rerunning on NBCU. It may not have been their original content, but they were purchasing some of the best series that have come out on television over the last decade.
Okay.
And then if you looked over the life cycle of Peacock, you know, the race to this streaming platform, there's so many different networks that you could stream on, or so many different streamers. And at the end of the day, there's going to be a monopoly where it's only three or four of these guys end up actually making it through. You know, everyone's coming out with their own streaming service, but at the end of the day, it's all going to become a big conglomerate and there's going to be maybe three or four at the most. Mm-hmm. And we feel really, really solid about where Peacock is and where NBCU is, along with their initial entry point. I think it's $5.99 a month for some of the specials they were running, especially during those playoff games. Mm-hmm. Felt really solid about that. Felt really solid about the subscriber growth over the last year. I think they're in the upper 20 millions now in subscriber growth.
Really? Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yep.
Was there a big spike, or do you get to pay attention to all of those metrics as far as, like, was there a huge spike because of that NFL playoff game?
I think they got 2.5 million subscribers more from the playoff game.
That's fair.
Which is decent. It's solid. Yeah. But, you know, for me, over the last year, I was looking at timeline-wise, Netflix is actually on a decline. You know, mm-hmm. their business life cycle, they were really, really huge 6 and 7 years ago. That was when they were just growing through the roof. And now they're almost sort of on a decline. And so I'm looking at it as, who's going to be the big player 2 to 3 years from now? And we feel really, really solid about Peacock. And we also feel like NBCU valued us for a new series. You know, if we were with a Netflix or some of these other gargantuan networks, we'd just be like a faceless asset to them. Like, they wouldn't even know who we are.
Yeah. Mm.
You know, we know a lot of the executives now at NBCU. We have constant conversations with them. Like, it's actually like a working relationship with them, which is pretty neat.
Well, it sounds kind of like a groundbreaking opportunity with them being it's a relatively new platform for them, digital space. So you get to kind of be the poster child of launching this brand. And so they are going to invest more time, and that you're not going to just be sometimes feeling like a redheaded stepchild.
Correct. Right. We wanted to be on the front end of this growth. We didn't want to be joining something that's already seen its peak and is on the decline, or, you know, they've already got their so-called favorite children underneath the network, or their favorite series. You know, this gives us the opportunity to potentially become that.
Yeah. Mm. You got anything?
Smart. I'm fascinated.
Nope. Okay.
No, I'm just sitting here like soaking it all up, listening.
I have this, a really...
But it has to be like kind of a little bit nerve-wracking, because like you said, thinking about someone like Netflix, where you're going to be 2.5 years out and you're going, I'm not getting any younger, but thinking about that content wise, you know what I mean? Like if, and I'm not trying to say, but like, if you're thinking eventually you're going to get married and you're going to start a family, like that's gotta be like something you're thinking about. Like we gotta move.
We gotta move. Yeah. It's
because there's always stuff.
Well, and honestly, with how big Yellowstone is, this being the last season of Yellowstone, we know there's going to be competitors coming out.
Sure.
And so we wanted to be first to the table with a reality version of Yellowstone.
Right.
So that's why we were hustling to get this done, hustling with Peacock. And we knew, hey, if we can get this to air first, we already get the first mover's advantage.
Right. Smart.
This wasn't your idea. This wasn't your family's idea. This was the production company's idea that came to you and said, how do you feel about doing this? Is that correct?
It was a collaboration effort because they had initial thoughts of what we could showcase with the family. At first, they thought we were like strictly riding on horses 8 hours a day, like, you know, your Western cowboy from the 1800s. And once we brought them out, we started showcasing, hey, we've got more than just this farm and ranch, more than just the cowboy lifestyle. Like, we've got this whole umbrella of businesses that we're trying to build up and start. And then we've got all this relationship drama that we just happen to organically produce. Like, there's a lot to unpack here. And we think this show could be so much more than just sitting in a saddle all day long.
When you were here last time and I asked you, when we got into the Joe Millionaire talk, was, did that change your life? And you said not to the level that you really thought it would. No. And then you got into the depths of the dramatizing and the, you know, nobody goes onto a dating show to find true love. They're just going in there to build their brand. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, but what I kind of took away from it was that it was somewhat of a disappointment. Not that it was a bad experience, but it didn't live up to the level of expectation that you had set for it.
I put 7 weeks of my life onto that. Like, my businesses took a major hit. I was trying to do everything I could to run those for 2 hours every morning before we started filming. And I was weighing, like I do with anything, it's risk versus reward. And I was sure. Like, okay, you know, the potential reward is well worth the risk of going out here to Atlanta filming for 7 weeks. Well, then the reward was not quite what I expected. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't, you know, the show ratings didn't do well. It didn't really help any of my brands per se. And, you know, so it was definitely a disappointment from that perspective. Obviously, aside from the fact that now I'm with Cal and extremely happy, like, that was incredible that it got me that opportunity with her. But from a business and brand perspective, it was a disappointment.
Okay. So where I'm going with that is, were you gun shy about doing this reality show again?
Absolutely.
I mean, because this is at a whole nother level.
Absolutely.
This isn't 7 weeks.
No.
Right?
This was like three or four, actually like almost 4.5 months.
Yeah.
And they were in my backyard, like up in my bedroom, literally in my bedroom, you know, every single day in my office. Like, we unveiled the curtain behind personal drama, personal family drama that everyone likes to try and hide and dance around and portray mm-hmm. their life is perfect and they don't have family issues. We're like opening it up and saying, hey, world, here's who we are. Yeah. And that's a very, very scary feeling.
Yeah, very vulnerable feeling.
It is. And sometimes, like, even to this day, we're still a little nervous about it. We're like, man, we're going to have bankers watching this show. And they're watching us have this family drama, watching us, you know, my brother Cole getting hammered at a bar. Like, there's a lot of hesitation and feelings of reserve that you have going into this. But to us, it was like, whenever we first got into this, we were talking with Jeff Jenkins Productions and some of the lead producers, and they said, what made the Kardashians who they are is they showcased 99% of their life to the world. Mm-hmm. A lot of times reality shows will say, oh yeah, we'll show you everything. And then they'll tell the cameras to get out of here whenever there's a serious conversation happening, and they'll only showcase 60% of their life. Mm. Well, we're like, okay, let's beat the Kardashians. Let's show 100%. Like the good, the bad, the horribly ugly, let's show them everything. And that's what we did.
So how much has this altered your life, not only personally, mm-hmm. but professionally? You talked about how it was a detriment doing Joe Millionaire and trying to 2 hours a day before you started filming to run these businesses. Mm-hmm. You know, now you're running the businesses basically on camera, but I understand the TV world a little bit. Like, there's going to be, okay, stop, cut, do, move, that, do, right. shift.
You could be in the middle of a different an actual angle. Call or like a business call, and they mm-hmm. make say cut, and you're like, I got to actually do this.
And there were several moments where it's always a little bit of frustration, but when you sign on to it, you know, okay, this is going to be, there's going to be frustrating moments, like doing an entry to a business meeting. I have to walk in 4 different times through the same door. Like, you know, that type of stuff. That's every single day you're dealing with filming, because you just have to get different shots. But there's real life happening on the farm in the middle of planting season. In the middle of planting season, on one of the earlier episodes, we had $100,000 get stolen overnight. We show up to the office in a truck, 2 lawnmowers, and a complete mowing trailer setup is completely gone. And that happens right when, like, the cameras are there at the office. We show up and we're like, where's our setup that was sitting right here last night?
Oh, man.
And that's all captured real life on camera. And you see our real life reactions to it. And so, you know, looking back, there's going to be moments where we regret the way that we acted to a situation, but it's not like we had time to reenact or think about how we wanted to portray ourselves. It is real and authentic. Like, you see the moments right whenever we're just finding out about a certain situation and we're ticked off, and you get to see everything as authentic as it is.
So I'm going to ask probably a dumb question, but the McBees are doing really well before this. Farming is doing great. You get more land. You got Apex Meat Sticks. That's scaling very well. you know, obviously you got the real estate stuff, the car washes. That's the big new venture that you were really involved with the last time that you were here, and that's continuing. Which, by the way, I'm a little pissed off that the one down 150 is not done yet. Let's get the moving
it's
on.
Gonna get going finally.
Okay,
a little bit.
This is right down in my neighborhood. I drive by that every single day, and I'm like, "Let's go, Steven! Come on!" Because if you haven't noticed, my hunting truck out there is not looking
dirty.
Yeah, for sure. anyway, I digress. You got a lot going on. You guys are very successful without the TV show. Why do the TV show?
For us, it was a couple different reasons. Number one, you know, success is very, you know, I'm lucky enough to have networks with a lot of people that are so-called successful from the outside looking in. But whenever you dive into the businesses from a behind-the-scenes perspective, it's almost like social media. You know, it's a highlight reel of everyone's life. Well, you could see the highlight reel of all of my businesses. Doesn't mean they're all just clicking and running like no other and doing perfect. The car washes ramped up way slower than ever expected. I mean, last year with the television show, while trying to run these car washes, it was hellacious on us all. Now, since the turn of the new year, car washes have done so good, and I'm so thankful for it. But
it also helps if you got really good weather in February.
Correct. That helped out tremendously. But yeah, so I mean, it, you know, for us, it gave us the opportunity to put rocket fuel on our businesses that were slowly ramping up to being successful. This gives the potential of just expediting that success and shortcutting it to where we could be on a completely different trajectory. I mean, mm-hmm. quite honestly, like a $1 billion trajectory within 2 years if things hit right.
How do you research that prior to going into it?
I am on the computer looking at all sorts of different reality shows, what the outcomes of those shows were, what each of the different cast members did to whether they pursued their own personal brands, their own business brands. So the Kardashians, I respect the hell out of them. You know, everyone likes to make fun of them mm-hmm. because of what they've done on reality shows and they're drama filled and everything. Right. I respect them so much.
From a business standpoint.
Yes, from a business standpoint, mm-hmm. What they were able to do to convert their show traffic to actual business brands. I mean, I think four of them are billionaire status now. Mm. As far as net worth goes, I mean, what they've done isn't that crazy? Unbelievable. And they work extremely, extremely hard. And I know so many people like to make fun of their lives and what they are, you know, what's broadcasted on TV and how they mm-hmm. portray the show is like they do nothing but sit around and have drama all day. And then you actually dive into what they're doing day to day. They wake up early, they work out, they're working most of the day. Like they're legitimate business people. Mm-hmm. And so I like to study what they did to be able to capture that traffic as far as, you know, how they leverage show traffic to send it over to their brands, what brands did they come out with, how did they market the brands within the show themselves. Mm-hmm. That's all pieces of the puzzle to me. And so I've spent a lot of time watching reality TV, not from a viewer perspective, like I enjoyed the show. I'm trying to see from a business perspective, how are they showcasing their brands? How are they wearing it? What are they talking about? How do they try to fuse their personalities within the business brands themselves? Mm-hmm. And how have they done this to leverage it to such success? Yeah. It's pretty wild.
No doubt. Who else is good besides the Kardashians?
So if you look at Jersey Shore, what they were able to do early on, obviously that was an early day reality show. Yeah. So, you know, they had the advantage of being, having such a big audience, mm-hmm. but you look at what, some of the people from The Bachelor have done, specifically like Jason Tardik, has become a resounding success as an author, mm-hmm. Has launched his own agency for, social media promotion of brands and personal influencers as well. Mm-hmm. And so just paying attention to what people are doing and how they're utilizing these shows. And, I feel like we have the advantage of already having a solid foundation of businesses to mm-hmm. build off of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whereas so many people get into reality TV and it's almost like this, like they've never had a business before. They hit it big with reality TV and then they just open up a business. We already have this great base. Now, mm-hmm. what could we do if we poured rocket fuel on it with show traffic?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
you have to get the whole family involved to do this. This isn't just Steven going off to be Joe Millionaire for 7 weeks. This is okay. I'm getting everyone involved.
That's a lot harder than you would think.
That's
worse. Who was the last one to agree? Like the most
my
hesitant?
My youngest brother, Brayden. Because he's an introvert, does not want to be on camera. You know, he didn't really grow up around the farm. He grew up down here in the city. Whenever my parents divorced, he stayed with my mom more. And in the show, you know, there's nothing, I'm not hiding anything here. The show shows all this. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was tough to get him to sign on with the okay. And then a couple of the girlfriends also were a little leery of being on TV because it comes with a lot of outside judgment from people that don't know who you are.
Yeah.
And you could be walking on water, the perfect person, like number one in all of the world as far as how you live out your life, and still have a multitude of haters online.
Oh, for sure.
Like Taylor Swift is such a good person, so many good things. Look at how much hate she gets.
I know.
It's mind-blowing.
Really good example.
It actually doesn't make any sense.
No. But,
yeah,
it's basic. And I understand it because for me, I deal with this myself as well, in a bit of a vulnerable moment. Whenever you see your friends having more success than you are at any given time, your first instinct is to say, why can't that be me? You know, mm-hmm. you kind of feel that jealousy creep up. And so it's just basic human, psychology to first feel that jealousy and almost a little bit of hatred as to why you can't have those opportunities or have that sort of success. And so I try not to let it, you know, affect us too badly. But shoot, just with the announcement of the show, you guys have seen the local mm-hmm. criticism online.
Yeah. And so I want to get into that. And, and you know that I love you, dude. And so I'm going to come at you hard, but it's not to be disrespectful or because this podcast never has been and never will be a bring in a guest and try to get ya. Mm. Oh, I got you moment. And I don't want that. but I do question, like, when I see the hate, frankly, I hear the hate. Mm-hmm. I know you on a personal level, not that we're real close or anything, but I think we've spoken enough to know that I feel like I know your heart and the type of person that you are. you're using this platform, the show, to elevate the current businesses that you have and potentially expand on other opportunities. It could be a brand, apparel, what, you know, whatever it could be. I'll use the car wash as an example. You might have all of this excitement throughout the country, but if you've gotten, if you're getting a substantial amount of local hate, doesn't that potentially run the risk of hurting your car wash business?
It does. It absolutely does. And it's, well, especially on like the farm and ranch side, man, we have really gotten some serious hate from local farmers and ranchers, really about the, we're not real cowboys. You know,
are you?
Really, the word cowboy is yours to define. Like if you have cattle and you work cattle, that's the definition of a cowboy. And under that perspective, we have 2,000 head of cattle. My brother Cole and his best friend Jake, who are big cast members on the show, literally work with cows every single day of their life. Now, are they in chaps with spurs on in a horse saddle 8 hours a day? No, because it's not the most efficient way to get things done. But just because we do things a little differently doesn't make us not cowboys. And I also, I never say we're the best cowboys in the world. We're the most cowboys. And like, I'm not trying to measure like
the cowboyist.
Yeah. Who's the cowboyist of the world or who's the best farmer cowboyist. Of the world?
Cowboyist. Like, I'm the cowboyist of the cowboys.
Yeah. Right. And it's insane. There's so much, there's a lot of locals that are sharing the post and saying, oh, I'm more cowboy than they are. And I'm like, good, you are. I'm not.
But what does that mean? Because I'm just curious. Because they do what? Because they like ride.
They're riding horses more than we do and working cows off horses. Or they're in rodeos and we don't do rodeos.
Okay. Because that's the only thing I could see where like I could see a rodeo guy maybe saying, oh, working cattle is not being a cowboy. Being a cowboy is riding a bucking bronco, you know? Like,
and the thing is, I'm not here to argue that. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Right.
But here's the thing. And this is not, I'm not trying to have like a self-righteous or virtuous moment here. But if we have the opportunity to showcase a struggling industry that is dealing with a lot of headwinds in farming and ag, and we can spotlight it to all of America and be able to hopefully improve that industry.
Right.
What's it matter? Like if we get eyeballs, the first step to improving an industry is number one, you have to recognize there's a problem. There's a problem in farming and ranching. You know, 150,000 farms and ranches have gone out of business since 2017. The average age of the American farmer is 58 years old. Is a suicide rate that's 3.5 times more than any other occupation out there.
What?
It's in the top five rates of suicide. Because you're working out there all alone, and Mother Nature could come and wipe out your entire life's work in the span of a couple days.
Yeah.
You're dealing with headwinds as far as commodity prices go. You have no control over your cost of product or what you're going to sell it for. And so there's so many different things that are causing these farmers to struggle or these ranchers to struggle. And we're like, hey, we recognize there's a problem. Now what can we do about it? We can bring awareness to it by bringing more and more eyeballs into what we do out here in small town America. Because a lot of the East Coast, West Coast has no idea about the problems that we face.
Right.
So if we're bringing more eyeballs to it, more awareness to it, yes, because it's a little bit drama. It's a reality show. We have drama in our lives.
Right.
And through all of our businesses, yes, we may not be the most cowboy or the hardest core, you know, hardcore rancher, farmer. We're not the best farmers. I've never promised to, or said I was the best. You know, I respect the hell out of guys like Chucky Weldon, Darren and Doug
Dale. You know Chuck Weldon. He used to Chuck Wagon on KFKF back in the day.
Yep.
He's now on KMZU.
Yeah, those guys blow us out of the water when it comes to quality of farming. They have years and years ahead of us. But we're able to grasp the eyeballs through this show, and we want to help the entire industry as a whole. So at the end of the day, if we're all on the same team, why are you coming down on us?
No doubt. No, I get that. It's like that in the hunting industry too, unfortunately. You know, like we could be all, we should be all lifting each other up, and instead we're all trying, not we all, but there are several out there that find gratification in tearing others down. What are you doing? I mean, you brought it up, so I'm going to ask. You want to bring a spotlight to it. You want to bring awareness to it. So what are you doing to bring awareness to it other than just filming it? What are you trying to do to, because here, again, I got to be careful how I say this because I don't want to come across disrespectful. You know, I grew up in a farming family. We talked about that last time you were here, and we don't have nearly as many acres as you all do. Don't have as many resources either. And so a lot of the things that you can combat troubles with in the ag business, granted, Mother Nature, you can't control that. But there are things that you can control if you have the resources, aka the money, to solve the problem. And a lot of these farmers, they don't have that. If they're smaller farmers, they have to go take out yet another loan, another note with their banker. And that's just another line of credit that's against their house or against this and against that. And it's just they're getting deeper and deeper and deeper in the hole. So how are you, as you're talking about wanting to bring awareness and fix it, how are you trying to fix it?
We're showcasing, number one, we're showcasing the problems that everyday farmers and ranchers face. So if you think about, and I used to say that unless you had paid off land and paid off equipment, there was no way to be profitable farming. But even that's wrong nowadays, because now property taxes on land are going so high that the operations from a farming operation cannot even cover some of those property tax expenses per acre. Over in Illinois, guys that have owned farms for generations that are paid off farms, paid off equipment, are having to sell those farms because they can't afford to pay the property taxes on that land. So think, like, that is how bad the industry is right now. And this is the industry that quite literally built America.
Right.
It is the root of what we are as a country, and we're losing it day by day. So if we can showcase the problems, and why do you think we have the car washes? Why do I have the meat business? I love farming and ranching. That's what we love to do. Mm-hmm. But we acknowledge that if we were just farmers and ranchers, we wouldn't be able to do any of this.
Yeah.
So we had to bring in these other revenue streams because of how bad that industry is. And now you have big corporate operations that are coming into farming and ranching. Bill Gates, some of these other large private equity firms that are buying up farm ground.
Yeah.
Are they buying farm ground because farming is so profitable? No, hell no. Mm-hmm. They're buying it because they're able to, number one, offset tax credits based on the amount of pollution they produce with their real profitable businesses. So whenever they're buying farm ground, if they farm in a regenerative and sustainable way, they can actually offset their tax expenses on the real profitable organization by sequestering carbon from the air, pulling it back down into the soil. And it's paying on a per acre basis. Mm-hmm. So these farmers, that's actually one of our best revenue streams currently, is taking these carbon credits, is what they call them, and selling them to big polluting companies like FedEx, UPS. That's where we make most of our money now.
Stop it.
Because farming is so bad from a grain perspective.
What?
That's insane.
So that's what all these corporate companies are doing. So you see all these private equity firms buying farm ground. All these small family farms are selling out because they can't afford it anymore. It makes no money. And so these private equity firms are coming in. They don't need to make money on the farming operation. They're just using it as a tax offset. And then obviously the appreciation of the ground at 3% annually. That's all they need it for. It's just a holding form.
So what needs, I mean, again, dumb question. What needs to change? Showcasing it is one thing. Well, how does that change it?
We have to get out of centralized food. So decommoditization of both our beef side and also our grain side. Because right now, if I did everything right on my farm, I grew it in a regenerative and sustainable manner. I was actually putting carbon back into the ground. I was rotating my crops. I even was using less passes over the soil. So I'm doing a better job of improving the soils on my ground. Mm-hmm. And you're out there, for lack of a better term, raping the soil every single year by taking all the nutrients out of it, mm-hmm. farming it in an old school way, turning the dirt over, like just being horrible for the ground. If I take my corn cob and you take your corn cob down to the city to sell it, whose is worth more? They're both worth the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we have to get out of the commodity markets. Mm. And to bring awareness to that, I don't know how we solve that problem. But it's got to change. Mm-hmm. Because right now, again, on the beef side, you have four conglomerates. You have Tyson, you have JBS, you have American Food Group, you have, can't remember the fourth one, Smithfield. Or that is that a Tyson company? I think those are the four. Right now, they are selling beef at less than their production cost because they're able to set up markets for the internal organs of those beef to send them overseas and turn them into medical supplements. So their profits are made on the medical supplements from the internal organs of beef, not the meat. How is a normal farmer like me who's selling beef? I can't compete with that.
Right.
They're selling it at less than the production cost. So this entire industry is failing the small town farmer or rancher.
Yeah.
And it has to change. And I don't know what the answer is going to be, but I know number one, we've got to get more eyeballs on it because if it's happening in the dark, no one knows about it.
Well, you know how you get back the local people who are giving you the criticism is take this as a passion project. Mm-hmm. You know, like seriously, like, is this about it? And again, I'm, you know, I care, you know, I respect you. I think some of the criticism could be looked at is this isn't about farming. This isn't about being a cowboy. This is about McBee's making another buck, you know. But what I'm hearing you talk now, like you're getting, your volume is coming up here. You're passionate.
I am.
This is something that is that is near and dear to your heart. So how can you take that concept and put that into the show?
Well, I think we do a good job of that.
And obviously none of us have seen a show yet, so I don't know, but I'm just saying, like,
the episodes are going
to
show.
Is this a deal where you go to Washington? Is this a deal where you go reach out to your local congressman and you really start
fighting? That's my end goal to this. Okay. It really is how do we bring awareness to this problem overarching in ag and ranching? Because like I said, 58 years old is the average age of the American farmer. What happens in 10 years whenever they're all retired? Who's going to take that over? Right now, it's the private equity firms that don't even care about the farming and ranching side. They're just using the land as, number one, a holding firm for their money, and then, number two, tax offsets for their real profitable companies. And I have so much respect, beyond respect, for farmers and ranchers that spend their entire lives working on the land that they love and that's generationally owned. I don't want to see them lose that.
Right.
I truthfully do not. And I'm not going to be self-righteous and say, oh, it's not to help promote my brands or build businesses. I want to do that.
Sure.
But a big overarching portion of what I wanted to showcase and help bring awareness about for the show is how we're losing our small town farmers and ranchers who work 7 days a week and who care more about their lifestyle, their farm, their animals that grow up on that farm. Like, it's not just a number on a spreadsheet to them like these private equity firms and these big conglomerate beef companies.
Right.
Like, that means something to them. And they're losing it.
It's their livelihood.
It's their livelihood. And it's not any fault of their own. The market is set against them. Like, how are you going to defeat a big conglomerate that's selling beef at below production cost if you're a small town farmer that owns 30 cattle? You can't.
Yeah. I don't know why anybody, honestly, like, with the right mind, and I'm not trying to talk anybody or even speak disparagingly on people who are young and, with aspirations of being a farmer / cowboy. Why in the world would you want to get into that space based in the direction that it's going right now?
It makes zero sense.
You would have to have the resources and a pretty big bank, bankroll to be able to weather the storm, especially getting started. Holy cow.
It's impossible to get started right now. But even if you had paid off ground and paid off equipment, like I said, property taxes are shooting through the roof so much that you still can't make a profit on ground. Actually, farming ground, you cannot make a profit on. And so we're having to diversify, find all these different revenue streams just to support the farming and ranching. It is an uphill battle. Like, the whole perspective of farming has just completely changed. And it's such a morally good foundation to build a life from. Mm. Like, if everyone could farm and ranch growing up, it would fix so many problems in America nowadays.
Because there's so much how to work, that's for sure.
There's so much innately good that comes from a farming and ranching operation, from a responsibility, work ethic perspective, family-oriented. All of these different things have been built from farming and ranching, and that's what our country was built off of. And if that goes away, so do all those morals and values that we built this country on.
Cool. Well, I mean, that's not cool, but I mean, I understand where you're going with that and that part of the foundation and the integrity of the occupation. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what's really, really cool. And I'm blessed to have, grown up around that as well. And it's something that's near and dear to my heart. I want to ask this because we just got a ag lesson.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, that's a tangent.
All right.
So we're moving on for those listening who have no idea what that space looks like. I'm going to just come at you straight from the hip. So how much of this show was dramatized?
Would it be unfortunate to say 0%?
Was it?
Yeah, no, it's not. There's not anything because that was depicted that was made up.
Let's go back. Joe Millionaire, you came right out and said there was a lot that was dramatized. It's correct. Reality TV. You know, you got to do this. Nobody comes on to dating shows to find true love. We're all doing it for this. Okay, so you're saying that this was 100% authentic.
100%. Like, I could not be any more authentic. And that's what so many people look at the show and be like, oh, first of all, what the hell is wrong with you guys? Because of everything that's taken place across the farm and across the different businesses and the personal lives. But these cameras were truly just following us day to day, and whatever happened, happened.
Okay.
So it was every single situation you're going to see in these episodes is truly what's happening.
did anything change in the setup? And what I mean by that is, like you said, your youngest brother mm-hmm. had lived down in the city. Mm-hmm. It, while you were filming, did you go, okay, we've all got to be here all at the same time, all day, every day. And like, was that normal? Everybody no. was living there or at least living close by and coming to the same.
Correct. So place Braden lived down in the city. He works at the car wash mostly. You're only going to see him in car wash scenes. Mm. You're only going to see him whenever we're down in the city filming.
Gotcha.
He doesn't go out of his way to come to the farm.
Yeah.
And so I think the show really depicts our lives as authentically as they truly are.
Well, there was a spot in the trailer, and I'm just going to be honest with you, based on how I know you, your dad's talking about how, which, you know what, let's do this. I'm going to pull up the trailer here.
Absolutely.
And again, you could watch this if you're on Spotify or YouTube, which I'm going to play this off YouTube. Is there a way you can give me a copy of the trailer so I can put this into the production of the pod? All right, so here we go. This is the trailer of the McBee Dynasty.
We're cowboys in every sense of the word.
Jess, run!
It may look fun.
Watch yourself!
But it's chaos.
I'm Steve McBee. I've spent the majority of my life building this farm and ranch, acre by acre. One of the boys is going to have to take over the farm. I'm just not sure who that's going to be. Steven is driven, number one in his class.
I'm trying to run the global business.
This company would not run without me.
Cole is a wild child.
Do not try this at home, boys and girls.
Brayden's my baby brother.
I grew up with my mom. I just wasn't quite as close with my dad.
My brother Jesse's the pretty boy.
I saw his hair flow.
I'm actually jealous, I'm not gonna lie.
Oh boy.
Do you think dad would trust you with taking over the farm? That ain't gonna happen over my dead body.
Oh, you think you're the head of the table, huh?
I am the head of the table, bud. Unless you wanna fight me for it.
This family in the drama.
Right now we're $50 million in debt. Galena's our CFO, and she's been working to borrow $105 million. The success of this deal is in Galena's hands.
You better be nice to Galena, because we need her for this.
What's up, handsome? You want some coffee? They're gonna know my name.
Everybody knows the McBees.
We have so many enemies in this community.
It's like the whole world's against you.
You're giving my vehicle. You take care of your whore.
I'm mad I'm not getting laid tonight.
The pressure's relentless. One of you guys is going to have to step up.
What are you doing, Karen?
Come on, get it!
We could lose everything.
I think I'm speaking for all of us when I say we'd rather die than watch this place go down.
Amen.
We ain't losing this farm. They're gonna know my
name. There you go, the trailer of the McBee Dynasty premiering March 11th. On Peacock. All right. So there's a few things from there that I wanted to hit at. Your dad's talking about turning over the farm to one of the boys. Mm-hmm. Okay. Is he really in a hurry to turn over the farm to one of the boys?
I think with all of the different businesses that we have going on, and he is 52 years old now. I don't want to say he's on his downhill stretch, but
I'm 48. So easy.
Yeah. I'll try to make the age jokes a little lighter here, but he understands there has to be a succession plan in place.
Right.
And he understands that one of us four boys, like there's only one true leader of an operation. If you have two different voices trying to say they're both leaders, operation fails every single time. So mm-hmm. there's one person or one of us boys that's truly going to take over the farm. And I think he's trying to decide who that would best be. And we're all vying for it. I mean, maybe not Brayden. Well, Brayden would just so he could flip the farm. Yeah. So yeah, we all have different
selling
reasons.
Selling it to Bill Gates.
Yeah. Yeah. So we all have different reasons for wanting to take it over. But that's authentic.
So when the thing that you said in that trailer that I thought was that caught me off guard, if I'm just being honest, was that you wanted it and you think dad's going to turn this over to any of you guys, not over my dead body. Mm-hmm. Like there's this fierce competition. And then you talk about wanting to fight for it and stuff like that. Is that really the relationship you have with your brothers?
We're the closest. We're as close as you could be as brothers, honestly. But to say we're hyper-competitive would be an understatement.
Okay.
And when it comes to the farm, I think we all have different directions of what we think the farm could be. You know, for me, I see it as potential new revenue streams coming in as far as the meat facility goes, as far as you know, some of the different brands we have going on. Cole wishes he could turn the entire thing into a gigantic hunting farm. my brother Braden, like I said, would love to flip it. And Jesse's just kind of easy going, just wants to take it over and keep status quo and keep things as they are.
Okay.
And so we all have these different visions of what we want to turn the farm into. And it really comes down to who's going to take over the farm for what direction it's going to go in.
Yeah, who's going to make it successful. Mm-hmm. So let's go ahead.
Do you think the other brothers are doing as much? I mean, you obviously think you're the best one for it, right?
I do. Yeah.
110%.
Without a doubt. Yeah.
Without a doubt.
Okay. I would like to think so.
Okay. So do you think they're doing as much behind the scenes as you are in the research part of it, as far as like what is best? Like, have you researched their ideas to say, this is why mine is a better idea and why it's more sustainable than turning it into a hunting farm?
And speak freely, because I want to make sure that every single one of your family members listens to this podcast.
Oh,
so like put it all out there. Be real.
No, I think that when it comes to having the facts and the data to support a decision, I'm the only one that brings that to the table.
Mm-hmm. What would their argument be for them?
As far as like why they would be the best?
Why they would be better?
Cole could say that I can't run a tractor. I can't run a piece of equipment. I don't sit out in the fields. I don't know what actually takes place out there.
Is that true?
He calls me Mr. Spreadsheet.
Is that true?
A little bit.
Okay.
It's been a bit.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been a bit. Yeah. I think you give me an hour or two and I could figure out how to run it. But no, I mean, from a physical work perspective, I'm not out on the farm every single day in a tractor cab like he is.
Okay.
Working cows, whatever it may be, he's doing the physical labor.
That's mm-hmm. what Cole would say.
Yep. His argument. It's like, I'm actually out there on the farm. I work with the animals. I work on the crops. Like, I know what's going on.
Sure. What would Jesse say?
Jesse would say that he is more emotionally steady and that he is less squirrel-brained. So like me, I'm all over the place, you know, starting different brands, like seeing this whole global perspective of what we could be. I'm bouncing in and out of the office. I have a little bit of my dad in me. I'd like to think I'm a little more organized, but definitely all over the place. Mm-hmm. And Jesse's more even keel, like, hey, let's just take things slow. You know, let's just manage this and try not to grow so big that we lose it all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's his argument.
Okay. And then Braden's
like, let's get the farm and let's flip it. So we all have different intentions for the farm. It just comes down to who it's going to be to see which direction it's going to go.
All right. So let's hypothetically say this thing goes on for 10 years.
Because mm-hmm.
you talked about the longevity of the show by going with Peacock. If this thing goes 10 years and say season 10, Dad, Steve Sr. decides, I'm out. I'm turning this thing over to Steven. What then does that look like as far as the brothers' involvement? Because I don't see the McFamily. I mean, you talked about the relationship that you have with your brothers. Mm-hmm. I don't see this being, I mean, I could be wrong, I guess, but I don't see this being a situation where like, okay, Steven's now in charge and peace out, bros. You're, you know, like they all still, I would think they all have their value.
A farm this size requires every single one of us to run it. It really does. And I mean that. I mean, like I said, I don't know about our tractor and planter setups. I don't know about our sprayer setups. I'm not out in the fields every single day. So if I was to take over everything and lost Cole or Jesse or even Braden from a car wash perspective, like it's too big for any one of us to truly run by ourselves.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's going to take all four of us.
Okay.
It's just who's going to be the one that makes the decision at the end of the day.
Okay, so I'm going to
I feel like with what you said, though, and of course, I don't know any of you, right? I only mm-hmm. know how you're describing your brothers and then what I hear from you. But it seems like you of the brothers might have a harder time working under one of the other brothers.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Than the other way around.
Correct. Yeah, being the eldest brother, I think that they automatically take more of a, like a submissive role, just to mm-hmm. an older brother. And so if Cole or Jesse were to get the farm, it'd be tough for me. Be a bit of a humble pie moment for me, and I'd have to take it on the chin.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how that'd really work. And I don't think we're going to make it to season 10 before that decision becomes...
Really?
Yeah, it comes to fruition. It may potentially happen by the end of season 1, actually. We'll see how things go.
Boy, that's a cliffhanger. Uh-huh. All right. Tune in to find out.
I have a reason for asking this. Mm-hmm. Did your brothers play sports in
high
school?
We all played sports, yeah.
Yeah. Did any of you wrestle?
We actually did not wrestle.
You didn't. Because no. There were a couple scenes, and I don't know if it was the trailer or some other clip that I
Jesse.
Saw.
Yeah,
oh, yeah. And I was like, so was that just a bad wrestling move, or was that a...
That
no,
was...
not a thing.
What were they doing that day? They were out in the fields messing around. That was actually on a gravel road. And the show wanted to showcase them messing around like anything with us brothers. Jesse kind of hit Cole a little too hard, and Cole actually got really mad about it. And so he tackled Jesse, forgot the cameras there for a minute. And that was actually legit. Like, they both got up and they were all bloody from the gravel.
Oh, right. My gosh.
So there have been fights then, like physical fights. Oh,
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, like, we get into it nonstop.
Not including filming. I'm not trying to get like, is there a fight on the show? But like, is that like a normal thing?
It is, yeah.
Wow.
Really? Yeah, regularly?
Yeah, for the most part. Jesse and Cole do especially, and then Cole and Braden do. For the most part, I'm
so
more
Cole
the
is the
polished,
fighter.
Mature one that doesn't.
Cole's the fighter?
Cole is, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I had no brothers, so this is like, huh.
Oh, yeah. But the funny thing about our family is, I mean, we could seriously be on the edge of, or even past the point of throwing fists at lunchtime. And then by 6 p.m., we're all eating dinner together laughing like nothing happened.
Yeah.
And that's the God honest truth about us is, you know, we fight hard, but then we make up and we understand that it's all of us on one team. Our backs are against the wall and we're facing, you know, these huge headwinds that I discussed earlier in the ag industry and just in the startup industry in general. And so it's like, hey, we're all we've got. So we got to figure out a way to make up. So
you're walking through what looks like maybe the grandstand of a rodeo. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
That was dirt track racing.
Dirt track racing. Okay.
Yep.
And somebody from the stands yells F you.
Yep.
Is that, that was real?
Yeah, that's real.
And so do you go out ever locally? I mean, is this some, you kind of talked about the last time you were here, your girlfriend's really going to love me having bringing this up. You and Kayla were not together. And so you had the runner up come to town and then you guys went out and there were some pictures taken. It got sent to TMZ. And so do you have reservations about going out in public in Gallatin or any of these local small communities because of the, I mean, like, I guess what I'm saying is the juice worth the squeeze to go out just to deal with that?
No, it is not. And I'll preface this by saying 85% of the locals support us and are great people. We love them to death. Like,
okay,
I don't,
so it's not that bad.
It's not everyone. 85% love us, but the 15% that hate us, they hate us with a passionate hatred that I cannot even begin to describe. Like, I tell Cole and Jesse, don't go up to the bar in Gallatin. That's like, you're going to
get asking for trouble.
Yeah, you're going to get in a fight up there. Everyone's drinking and they see a McBee walking, they're going to fight you. And it's happened before. They went to a party in McFall, which is close to Gallatin. It's about 10 or 12 minutes northwest of Gallatin. And I went to bed. This was a Friday night. Jesse, Cole, Jake, their buddy, a couple other buddies of theirs, heard about this party and they got invited to it. So they pull up. And they walk inside the house. Well, the invite was a setup. And the minute they walk inside,
you got jumped?
Jumped bad. And that was
how long ago was this?
4 years ago.
Wow.
And they came back like midnight. I was sleeping and I woke up and Jesse's ears all bloody. Cole's got a broken nose. I mean, said like 30 dudes just started attacking them the minute they walked in the door. And this is just, it's so crazy that we have so much hatred in that area from the 15% that do just passionately hate us, because it's never the people that we directly work with or communicate with. It's always like arm's length transaction. So it's like the friend of the friend that heard a rumor that we bought all of our land through money laundering or drug deals. Like, this is legitimate small town gossip.
Oh, wow. Right.
That is legitimately what some of the people up there that hate us think about us.
Okay.
There was one post I just saw the other day. She was talking bad about us on Facebook when she shared the trailer and then said, y'all should just go scour their land for all the dead bodies. And I'm like, what? And then she's like, please don't murder
That's
me.
That's a serious accusation.
Please don't murder me, McBees. I was like, who do you think we are?
Wow.
The like, Duttons?
I was like, yeah.
Okay, I was going to go there. So who's Rip? I mean, if you guys are the modern real life Yellowstone, like, you come back to the bunkhouse and Rip finds out that his cowboys got roughed up, there's going to be a reckoning. Is there ever going to be a reckoning, Steven?
I don't know. We may find out. I do know that they've been trying to compare us, like all the different news articles, to Yellowstone. So they keep placing us as different characters. Obviously, my dad, John Dutton.
Right.
My brother, Jesse Casey, because spitting image.
Like, they do look a lot alike.
Doppelganger.
Like,
it's
even the hair and everything. Yeah. I was like, was that on purpose or has his hair always, like, his hair has been like that?
It's been like that for a few years. And it's.
Casey can brawl.
Oh, yeah.
Come on, Jesse.
Throw down a little bit. Cole is more of like the Beth Dutton because he's just kind of crazy and out there, the wild child of the family. And then I keep getting called Jamie, and it pisses me off so bad. Like, that is the one thing.
What? Oh, is it because of the business? Because he's a like lawyer?
Business,
and
Yeah.
Oh, but still.
A little more sophisticated, but he's the traitor, man.
It pisses me off so bad.
And he's adopted.
Ew.
I know. I keep getting called the Jamie Dutton. It's like, Steven, who's the Jamie Dutton on the show? I'm like,
oh, no.
Seriously.
That's not fair.
All right. So let's transition to the women in the show. Mm-hmm. Before I get into this, I'm gonna have a vulnerable moment and share something with you. You had shared with me that you're going to do this show. Mm-hmm. And then we were trying to do another podcast with you to basically be an extension of the last podcast and maybe even dive into the mental health side of the entrepreneurship. My family got sick. I had to cancel on you. I apologize for that. And then I started talking to you about maybe Heartland Waterfowl partnering with you on the Apex meat stick side. You started to ghost me. And I don't know that I'm not suggesting that it was intentional, but I knew that it was because you were probably in the middle of filming, mm-hmm. which again, how that must alter your life, not only with just a conversation with me, but many of your other friends and the outside communication you have with the outside world, mm-hmm. like for an extended period of time. Yeah.
2023, I was not in public.
Right. And so I started to take it personal because I thought maybe it was the conversation that I had with you on the last pod about Kayla and how you should have picked the runner up because she was smoking. She was, and I thought, oh my God, Kayla probably heard that. I see together. They're back together. She's probably like, screw that guy. You're not going to go talk to him. You're not going to be on his podcast. And I was like, man, I hope to God that isn't what it is. But needless to say, I'm glad you're here and I'm glad to know that it wasn't personal and she's not upset with me, but you guys are back together. That is awesome. That's been a roller coaster, right? So you were with her, then you were not, and then you were with her. And then when you came on the pod with me, you weren't with her again. And and now...
Was it just the back and forth two times?
Like, yeah, he's on and off again. Yeah, no, he's not.
So what happened? What? Come on. Because you know everybody's wondering what the hell's going on here. Is she just... The question, you know, and the statements and the people are going to say, oh, she's only back because of the show. Mm-hmm. So... Put it all out there. What really happened?
Absolutely not. And it's a big time foot and mouth moment. I think whenever we got together, it was an unconventional off a dating show. Like, there's just so many weird things about dating someone after a dating show. Like, after she just saw me dating multiple women. Mm-hmm. So there's zero trust there whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And then I get off from filming that show. I feel like my life's about to change, kind of get a big head about things. So I'm probably not acting, I'm not acting, like I should. Big ego gets in the way and I start thinking, oh yeah, I'm some big shot. I was on a horrible dating show. Yeah. And so then I'm not a very good person either. And you know, it's, so we broke up the first time, took a couple months off, got back together. And
why did you get back together?
Because there were so many things that connected us. It's why we ended up dating off the dating show. There were, were so common and so similar in so many ways. We just had some, I would say, some demons that we had to battle, myself included. I mean, if you watch the show, I am my father's child. And if you watch the trailer, you can see that he's got a weakness and
temptation is a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I deal with the same struggles.
Okay.
And I'm not going to excuse it or anything like that. And so did some deep self-reflecting and had a little bit of a humbling experience over the last couple of years. And I think that helped me come back to the relationship a lot better. And then Calla had some things that she had to work on as well. Some PTSD and some trauma from growing up in some very, rough circumstances, some rough situations.
Did they get into that on the show?
A little bit, you know, some family members with some, drinking problems and things like that. And I think a lot of those genes quite possibly got passed down. Okay. And so she had to learn some things about herself and change some things too. And so throughout this on and off again period, we're consistently working on ourselves as individuals. And I'm proud of both of us for that, because it was like, felt like we were on top of the world and then we were not, mm-hmm. you know, it was pretty rough, and then I got made out to be a fool coming off that dating show. Again, Annie is a great person,
mm-hmm.
And I haven't spoken to her in and over a year, a couple
since
years.
She's been on TMZ.
Yep. That must have been like 2 days after that article. And she is a great person, but, you know, I think it was something that I needed to experience outside of the camera setting to try and clear up what all happened. It was such a whirlwind on Joe Millionaire that I had to talk with her about some things and just kind of see what she was about, who she was in real life. 'Cause that was such a weird setting.
Yeah.
And still think the world of her, and it just, I don't think that we had long-term potential there. So, you know, I sound like a complete jerk saying I explored my options, but that's quite honestly the truth of things.
I appreciate the honesty.
I wanted to be sure of my decision. And I think after that, really realized that, you know, Cal and I may have our issues, but we're both consistently working on things. And, you know, if we get through some of these demons that we had, there's long-term potential there. And we've been going good ever since. So.
That's cool.
Good. Mm-hmm.
That was a really good answer, Stephen. That actually was not what I was expecting to hear, but I appreciate the sincerity and honesty. And so, how long then, I guess this is the, so you got together on the show, you broke up, you got back together again, broke up, you came on my podcast, and then you got back together again for the third time. How many times have you broken up and gotten back together?
Yeah.
Right. So how long now?
Have,
like a pitch counter.
Right. How long have you guys been back here?
So we actually got back together throughout the process of filming the show. So right at the start of filming, we were just starting to hang out again.
It had nothing to do with the show.
No, it actually did not.
Okay.
Yeah, it did not. And I can honestly say that with all my heart. So we were just starting to get back together. And then as the show started filming more and more, and we were spending more time together, started enjoying our time together a lot more and actually ended up building our relationship off of that. So but it's cool about the show because they showcase all that.
Yeah, but did that cause any hesitation for either one of you that like, is this a good time to do this?
Oh, because
there's going to be cameras around. So if there is a blow up or there is a...
That's a really good question.
Like, yeah,
I mean hey, we should get back together and put all of our demons and all of the...
share it with everybody.
The vulnerability out there for the world to see. I mean,
Yeah, it was very eye-opening to try and get back together while just starting to film that show because I couldn't pick her up from the airport without there being a camera. Like, they would go get the cameras on her before I even seen her. So I had zero time to like have like a really quick conversation about, you know, off camera, because when you're on camera, it's just different.
Yeah.
And so we had to build our relationship knowing that every single thing we were saying, doing was on camera 24/7. And so you'll see, 3 seconds into the trailer, that was early on before we had officially really gotten back together. I don't know if you saw that clip in the bar where that was not Cal on my lap.
No, I did see that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So that was
going to make the trailer.
Right before.
We sit down to watch the trailer. We're like, yes. 3 seconds in.
Oh.
I was like, oh.
But yeah. I mean, at this point, would you would look back and would you say that ended up being a benefit? I mean, you are still together.
Mm-hmm. I would say so. I mean, I think that things ended up working out pretty well. And I don't know, I think being able to watch this back is actually going to be even more beneficial because it's almost like a very hard self-reflection whenever you're watching yourself back on TV. Like,
mm-hmm.
You think all these good things about yourself and then you watch yourself back and you're like, oh, I was a jerk or I'm really arrogant. Like,
well, that came off different.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, at the time, I didn't think I was being like that. And then you watch it back and like, it's like watching from a third party perspective.
Yeah.
And so it's actually a really good self-reflection to be able to watch yourself back.
Sure. Mm. Okay. What is her involvement with the McBee businesses?
So she actually, works in the sales side of things for my mom's telecommunications company.
Whoa. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, that's not involved in the umbrella of the McBee businesses, is it?
Correct. Correct. So my mom runs that separately. And that's down here in Grain Valley. She has a really, really successful telecommunications company.
Huh.
But she wanted no part of the show, didn't want to be involved in the drama and everything. So we kept her out. We kind of shielded her from it.
From the business standpoint, because there's no way she's not involved in the drama of the show.
We kept her out of it.
Well, I saw her in the show. I saw her in the clip. She's when you guys are driving down the road and the other chick who's driving, who says this family and their drama.
That's Cole's girlfriend. And then that's Calla.
I understand. Kala is in the, she's in the show.
No, he's saying they keep their, they keep their mom. Oh, yeah.
No, my mom's
out.
Oh,
your mom. Yeah, I was talking about Kala. Sorry. No, I knew your mom. I figured your mom wasn't going to be involved in that. No, I apologize. I was still talking about Kala and her involvement in the show.
Kala's in every episode. Yeah.
Right. Like, and then her involvement in the family business.
Yeah. So as far as being up at the farm, and as far as how she is, portrayed or how she is in the show, she works full time for my mom, in the farm and ranch side. You know, her and my dad have this battle, and it's a true life battle. They've patched up things a little bit, but you'll see how it plays out in the show. They're not the biggest fans of each other.
Mm. Who is this again? Kala and who?
Kala and my dad.
Dad.
Oh.
Which you said you're a lot like your dad, so.
I am.
What's the issue there?
So my dad's a bit of a flirtatious guy.
Is your dad trying to freaking shoplift? No. What's going on here?
Kala doesn't like the example that he is setting for me because I deal with the same temptations that my dad does. My dad dates multiple women on the show.
Yeah.
Like that's how he lives his life, and he's not. He's very honest and open about it. Like, he's like, I don't want to be married. I served my prison sentence for 25 years. He'll say this exactly. He served his prison sentence for 25 years, and he's done with that. He wants to enjoy his time and just date around.
How long has he been single then? So 25 years married?
Yeah, since 2018.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. So she hates the example he's setting, and he hates that she tries to shield me, like doesn't want me to spend time with him, or kind of keeps me in a bubble. So it's like this ongoing tension throughout the entire show.
Wow.
And that's legitimate.
So do you guys have family dinners together?
Yeah, we do. they get along, and they've been working on things. I think Kala's just come to accept that my dad is who he is. And
you're trying to be something different.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Love him as my dad. But we have different perspectives, different opinions on life. And that's people. They all have different, different ideas of about how, you know, you should live your life.
So I'm a little timid to go here, but this is going to involve your dad's, love interests in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Last time you were on this pod, you had talked about the growth of the McBee businesses, and in particular the car washes, and hiring a CFO who had came over from a dental space. Is correct. That right? And is that Galena?
That's Galena.
Okay.
Yeah.
So your dad's banging Galena?
Yes.
Is that what I'm seeing here?
You're like reading through the lines pretty well.
Seriously? Like the CFO of the company?
Cannot make it up.
Wow. Okay.
And then...
So let me back up. Like, that's a really important person of your business who has helped elevate your guys's financial status.
She leaves. Honestly, the most important person in our business.
Right. So if something goes bad there, that could be detrimental to your company.
Devastating. Horrible.
And then I recognize, can I even say this? Is it Brooke? Is her name Brooke?
Mm-hmm.
I know. So I know of Brooke. We met before back in my radio days when I was rendezvousing the PBR Big Sky. Mm. I knew her last fiance.
Okay. Yep.
I'm not going to say any lames. So I've known her from, I mean, and look, she's a beautiful woman and has made a name for herself as an entrepreneur. And so I was surprised to see her in the show. Was that something that happened during the course of the filming that your dad and her got together, or were they seeing each other prior to the filming?
They were seeing each other prior to the filming.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. And are they still seeing each other?
I honestly have not kept up to date on everything with my dad. They had a big blowout there. Obviously, you can see Galena's upset because her car gets wrecked. You'll have to tune in to what happens there. But it's a wild scene that is 100% real and mind-blowing to me.
Wow.
Legitimately mind-blowing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Galena's car gets wrecked by...
So Galena is still in the picture then, at least professionally.
Mm-hmm.
And has there been any close encounters of her saying, I can't do this, I'm out?
Multiple times, and you'll see it in the show too. It keeps me up at night. I literally play like part-time psychologist, relationship mediator.
Dude, how are you and your dad not fighting? How are you and your dad not having a fist fight when you're busting your ass to build this family business? And because of some reckless decisions, it could be, as you put it, a devastating loss. Like, I would think that this would cause some friction between you and your dad.
It certainly does. It really does.
Like, to what level?
I mean, we get into it a lot. I mean, nonstop, actually.
Okay.
But the thing about my dad is I've understood, you know, he is very comfortable in who he is as a person, and you're not going to change him. You can't teach an old dog new tricks, right? So what he brings to the table from a business, work ethic, stress management standpoint of the businesses, he's brilliant in so many ways. Personal relationship-wise, he's an absolute train wreck. So you kind of take the good with the bad, and I'm just trying to keep the bad low enough to where it doesn't affect the businesses.
Gotcha. Okay. Talk about some of the other love interests in the show, be it Cole or, and I actually kind of want to get into Cole and seeing some of his rowdiness. It looked like there was, he was getting bombed at a Mavericks game. Was that where you guys in a suite at a Mavericks game?
That was actually Fort Worth Rodeo.
Oh, okay. Yep. It looked like the suite at the Independent, whatever they call that now.
The
Cable Dahmer. Yeah. But what's going on with Jesse and his love interest? Because it looks like on social media anyway that he's had a pretty stable girlfriend for a while.
He's been dating Allie over a decade now. And so it just comes down to the question of, like, what's holding him back? Like, why is he not proposing? They've been together for 10 years. Like,
wow.
What is his deal? And Jesse is the quiet one. Like, Cole and I wear our hearts on our sleeves. Jesse is, like, very reserved, emotionally even keeled. And so you never know what Jesse's thinking. And I can say that. You know, I feel like I'm as close to Jesse as any person on earth, and I couldn't tell you what he's thinking. And wow. So it's
how many years apart are you guys?
2 years apart.
Wow. Okay. All right. Fascinating. Jillian, you got anything? I get diarrhea of the mouth and my brain starts going.
No, the only thing I was going to ask earlier, so I'll just go back to it. Just a thought I had when you said going on Joe Millionaire was devastating to your businesses. Do you see that differently now because of this opportunity kind of stemming from that? Not that it couldn't have happened in another way. Like, right. You could have eventually gotten here, but it wouldn't have happened exactly the same way. Maybe it wouldn't have been with the same production company. And I know you don't realize the success of the new show yet, right? Correct. So that will look different 1 year from now, 2 years from now. But like at this point, do you see that differently now going, okay, so it was devastating, but
correct.
We're ending up ahead.
Yeah, it is. I mean, so I say it's devastating, but it led to this, which was the main goal of Joe Millionaire. So in that sense, it is a resounding success. And yeah. I think for me, I get so frustrated so many times in life because I've come to the realization that doesn't matter what business you're in, what occupation you do, there's no such thing as overnight success, and that delayed gratification is present in every single thing out there.
Yeah.
Like, the grass is not greener on the other side. You just have to keep grinding it out.
Yeah.
And so you're just delaying this gratification. I thought the resounding success and the rocket fuel poured on the businesses was going to come from Joe Millionaire.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't. But I got this new show.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously we don't know what's going to come of this new show, but feeling pretty solid about it. But
yeah.
Even if nothing happens from this show, who knows where it'll lead 6 months from now, a year from now. Just keep pushing the gratification down the road. And it's the entrepreneur's eternal optimism. You know, someday it'll happen. Mm. I just keep focusing on my inputs, and I know the output will eventually come.
Gotcha.
What are you most, maybe not nervous, because you don't seem like maybe you're a nervous person. You're just like, well, that's what it's going to be. It's a reality show. But like, what are you most in episode 4, is this, you know, a particular scene or something that you're captured doing or saying? Or
yeah, have you seen rough cuts of all the episodes yet?
We watched the first 5.
Okay.
I haven't seen the last 5.
So is there, to Jill's question, is there anything in the first 5 episodes where you're like, can we take that out? I don't like that part. Or do you even have the authority to ask that?
We do. Yeah, we have, in our contracts, we have a final veto on specific scenes. Like, if they were to make us look horrible or have the potential of ruining our businesses, we do have that ability. But again, in saying that we wanted to showcase our lives, both the good and bad, we said we're not going to hide anything on the show.
Right.
So for good or bad, better or worse, we're going to just let it all out there. And I think it really took a lot of talking with my family and I. We've had family meetings with everyone on cast multiple times over the last few months, just talking about, hey, you know, we want to showcase who we really are. And the whole human perspective of living is to understand that you'd rather be a flawed but real person in the daylight than a devil in the dark. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is I grew up in a very, very strict church, and I have absolutely nothing against religion of any kind whatsoever or lack of a religion. I respect everyone. But a lot of times in these almost cult-like churches, you have like associations where if you're in with the preacher and the preacher's core group of friends, you know, the preacher's son may be doing something, but he's doing it behind closed doors. So we're just going to overlook that. But so-and-so said a cuss word or he was drinking and all of a sudden he's the devil.
Right.
Well, at least he's real and he's not trying to hide anything.
Right.
I'd rather be that person and let it all out there. Understand I'm trying to improve, but yeah, I'm still a flawed person than, like I said, being a devil in the dark.
Yeah. Sure. Okay.
So that's kind of where I've got my mindset towards.
How many?
Well, and I even mean though, just like if there was anything embarrassing, I don't even mean like,
oh, there's so many things. Like there's so many different instances.
Can you give an example?
So embarrassing
without ruining it.
Let me just say we watched the first five episodes, all of us cast with all of the girlfriends there.
That had to be nerve wracking. Like as you or as a girlfriend,
we had like five different periods where girlfriends were walking out of the house saying, I'm never going to talk to you again.
Really?
Did
Kayla do that?
Yeah, she wasn't too happy. I mean, the trailer scene, that was unexpected.
Yeah.
And then...
Yeah. And there was no way to prepare for that. Hey, by the way, before we actually got back together, there might have been some filming with me in a bar and this girl sitting on my lap and...
I didn't know if that was going to make the cut, so why would I, like, divulge that information if I didn't know?
Well, maybe...
I was, like, leaving it up to chance. I was like, I don't want to... I know if I tell her, I'm 100% getting in trouble.
Yeah.
If it doesn't show, then at least, you know... That was my line of thinking. It was horrible.
And there was probably
bad idea. Learn from that.
Hey, I'm not here to judge, bro. But I am curious. Was there cameras rolling by chance when you're seeing the reaction to some of these things? Like, I mean, because that's very authentic moments. Like,
no.
Wait a minute. You're telling me there was another chick involved? What?
No, I wish though.
Yeah, oh, man.
It was insane.
So for the future. That would be a good idea to roll cameras when you're viewing.
We're thinking about the last five.
Yeah. Think about like, and I'm not a very good, I don't pay attention to a lot of reality TV shows, but the some that I pay attention more from a producer standpoint because of my own show. But you know, I know they have in a lot of these shows, say like Big Brother, they'll have like the fixed cameras in the upper corners of the room, you know, instead of just one person walking around, they'll have it up there so that they have the ability to capture everything.
Right. Somebody else.
Did you guys ever have any setups like that? Or was it just, and how many different cameras were rolling at one time? How many different people were walking around with cameras?
Oh, there was eight different cameras on us at any given time. So yeah, you see reactions to every single thing happening at any given time.
How do you function in life? I mean, how do you go from a meeting and drive from here to there? I mean, there has to be a convoy of vehicles that are just full of camera people and cameras.
Oh yeah. The Sprinter vans are everywhere. Everywhere we go, there's four Sprinter vans. With, you know, four or five crew members in each.
So filming was from when to when? Like how long have
we
you been
started,
done?
We started in early April and we went all the way through July 4th. And then they came back for a month to do some pickups and interviews in late August through September.
Okay.
But like what throughout the day? I mean, are we talking 6 a.m. till midnight?
It depends on like each one of us has our own schedule. And some days they'll focus on one person or, but for the most part, every single day we had at least 4 to 5 hours of filming.
So you did have breaks.
We did.
I mean, like, so when I say breaks, I'm saying like they could be focused on you and Apex and McBee car washes and your involvement with that. And they're following you around for say 3 days. So sorry, excuse me. And then they're going to focus now on Jesse the next couple of days. So you might have a couple of days off. Is that fair to say?
Not completely off, but not full days filming.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So we do 4 to 5 hours minimum per day, but then some of the lighter days we'd have the rest of the day off. Hmm.
Do you ever get into situations where let's say there's a heated moment or there's a sensitive moment to where you have to tell the production crew, okay, I need to talk to Kayla. I need to talk to my dad. I need you to leave the room. Like you never got to a moment where like, okay,
guys, I need you to leave. We got to have a private moment.
Nope.
You really just let it all fly.
Yeah. Oh, and if they feel tension in the air or some sort of like...
That just entices them.
They're like calling in like, backup.
Yeah, vultures.
They're like vultures on it. Yeah, there's multiple cameras in your face. And you're just like... So yeah, no, there's no moments where if there's a tense situation, there's a camera on you.
So how did having the cameras there intensify relationships or intensify certain moments to where then when the cameras are off, you're really having a come to Jesus moment with one of those people? Did that ever happen?
It really didn't, because we got so used to the cameras being there. Literally within a half day of having cameras in your face, you almost forget about it. And I remember Joe Millionaire, same situation. Like you forget they're there. And so then you're just living life and just acting how you normally would for the most part.
Okay.
I mean, so, you know, if you have a bad tense situation, you're coming to blows, you're doing it right on camera. And then if you're patching it up an hour later, you're doing it on camera again.
So did you leverage other relationships to be a part of this show? And you bring up Joe Millionaire. Did Kurt ever come back and make an appearance?
Kurt's on a few episodes, yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, what about, like, we talked about when you were trying to start an outdoor TV show and you were going to ATA and you were building relationships with some of these country artists to come and hunt on your farm so that you could get footage. Did you leverage any of those relationships?
Absolutely.
Of course you did.
Absolutely.
I don't know. Why did I ask? So then is it fair to say that maybe Dylan Scott makes an appearance on the show?
We've got a few different country artists making appearances on the show.
So we won't name any names.
Mm. Yep. We've got a few. So it'll be fun. I mean, it was, like I said, it's been like this delayed gratification since the time I was 15 of like wondering, you know, when would I ever, you know, take advantage of those moments that I've built up, you know, letting people come up and hunt with me, building these friendships, building these networks. Like, when do I end up taking advantage of that? And it's really been the culmination of the last decade and a half that I've spent building those networks that have come to fruition on this show.
All of these celebrities he knows, and Mike Hunsucker, Sean Luchtel, Ronnie Phillips was never invited to come onto the show. I mean, we're a big damn deal, Steven. Come on, man.
I think Hunsucker was supposed to come to the 4th of July party, which is one of the final episodes, and he couldn't end up making it.
Oh, shucks.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
I'm just joking. I don't know, man. I just think it's fascinating. Really cool conversation. I hope that it brings you the success that you're, you know, anticipating that it does. I mean, because it sounds like it's not, I guess I need, before I say this part, let me ask you, was it fun? Did you enjoy it?
I actually can honestly say I enjoyed every bit of it. The production company was a blast. Like, everyone from the crew was amazing. And then NBCU, even all the way up to the executive level, has been so much fun to work with. So I can't say a single bad thing. Like, as far as reality TV goes, for what you would expect out of it, having cameras on you for 4 months straight, it was a blast.
Okay. So that being said, I'm glad that you had a good time with it. I hope that it continues to elevate your other brands that you're involved with. But the one thing that I really did take away from this, if I'm just being completely honest, is that I loved hearing the passion that you had for the small farmer. Mm-hmm. And that being a point of emphasis for you to bring attention and awareness to that and the struggles that go on in that community. Having grown up as a small farmer, farming family, I mean, maybe a few thousand acres, you know, and that's my uncle and, you know, at the time, my grandfather's livelihood, my dad. There was not, you know, they weren't making money hand over fist, that's for sure. And if there is a hailstorm or a windstorm or a tornado like that, you know, yeah, you get that crop insurance, but does that pay the bills?
Doesn't even come close to break even.
And then you got to pay the note still. You got to pay the note, and then you got to pay, you know, a lot of these farmers now, because the big conglomerates are coming in and they're buying up land, you know, you have to lease land. And
crazy astronomical rates.
Right. And so then you still got to pay for that, right? And so I really appreciated that you brought that. And I would just, as a friend, challenge you to, as you continue with the production of this, let's not just bring awareness to it, but let's try to find a solution and try to dive in a little bit deeper to who we can talk to, who can actually make a difference and make a change. And I think that would be compelling TV too, especially to those people. And I think that would be another opportunity to win back that 15% of those people who want to shit on you.
Yes.
You know, I mean, that you're actually out for them. You're there to help them. You want to lift them up and encourage them and help out their situation as well. And so by being involved with this, if you can do that, maybe that will give people a new perspective.
I agree. And I think that, you know, I think that's why it hurts so bad whenever I do see some of the local hate from fellow farmers and ranchers from around the area on social media, because, you know, I care so much and I respect them more than they'll ever know. Like, they would outwork me 10 times to one, but they're so busy working and they're so busy taking care of their farms and ranches. They don't ever have the time to build up this awareness that it's going to take to make true improvement and true change in the industry. Mm-hmm. So if I can do that by way of a reality show where, yeah, there's some drama that they probably don't like, or there's some things that, you know, I screw up on and I don't look the best, and they want to, you know, try to really talk about it on social media and come down on me for it. I'm here to try to help. I'm not going to be completely self-righteous and say it's completely for someone else's benefit that I'm doing this reality show. No, I want to make my own brands. But yeah, if I can also help the industry as well and make it a big part of my goal in doing this, that's what it's all about.
Right. Good. That's awesome. You have anything? I guess my closing questions would be, you've always got something new boiling and shaking. So, obviously Apex is still doing well. Mm-hmm. I still want to work with you guys on that. So let's have a conversation about that when this is done. The car washes, we got to get that one down 150.
We're going to start. We finally, when do you break ground financing on that? We're just getting ready to. So we just got financing approved 3 weeks ago on that.
Okay.
That was the big holdup. Interest rates went high and banks shut their doors.
No doubt. No doubt. So once you get the financing, then you can break ground immediately. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So any day now you can start breaking ground.
Yeah, we've had permits for a couple years now. It's just been financed.
What is the time span from the minute you break ground?
Generally 9 months.
9 months. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. From you know, trees to keys, basically, is what we call it.
And what's the location? 150 and what?
Okay.
Like, what's it across from?
What the nearest
from
cross street is? It's literally right on 150. It's just
what is that?
West of, what is that? A Price Chopper there on the south side of 150.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's further west of that. Just go.
There's a coffee place.
Love coffee. It's west of there. Just west of there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So past Ward Road.
Okay. Just past Ward Road. Okay. On the north side of the road.
Yep. On the north side.
Based on where I see the sign. Okay.
That's where it's going.
Yep. And because here's the thing, I have a big old F-350 truck with a rack and all the stuff on top, and I just don't fit into automatic car washes, and I am sick of getting out. And man, it was so wet this waterfowl season. I don't want to even tell you the amount of money that I spend trying to hand power wash that truck. So
that's what we made the washes for. We're farmers that built a car wash because no car wash in Kansas City would take our trucks.
Right. So. Yes, exactly.
That's the whole reason for it.
What else is brewing in the McBee business?
I've got a fulfillment center going up. So we're bringing all fulfillment for Apex and our new meat brand that we're launching here. Actually, the day the show airs, we're launching McBee Meat Company for direct-to-consumer sales. So be able to send all of our beef, bison, pork, and soon-to-be chicken online nationwide.
Okay.
So building up the logistical challenges for that has been a hurdle, but we're basically through it all.
Okay. Wow. And any new, I was actually going to tell you that, like, hey, you should bring in some of your new meat stick flavors and we can sit here and do a little sampling.
I was wondering, I almost did. If I was up at the farm, I'd have brought some down. But yeah, we have a couple new flavors, zesty garlic. We're getting ready to launch cinnamon apple. And I've got it down to where we're going to be launching a flavor a month.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. I've got like
30. That's possible?
I've got 30 flavors ready to go.
Wow, man. Mm-hmm. You got more flavors than Dr. Pepper.
I'm just in there, just in the lab, just cooking them up.
That's
you're
incredible.
Ready to beat out a Girl Scout cookie.
That's right.
You'll be like, it's Apex meat stick season, ladies.
All right. So what is on the horizon? The last question. What is on the horizon then as far as, did we get the very first interview that promotes the McBee dynasty on Peacock?
I believe the first major podcast you guys have got.
Wow. Yep. How about that? Yep. Papa Ron podcast, baby. Yeah. Dude, thank you so much. I appreciate your friendship. Thank you for being so sincere and just giving it all authentically here on this podcast. Hopefully we can do this again. And if there's anything that we can ever do to help support you, we'd love to stay in contact, man.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
I appreciate you having
me. All right, wrapping it up. That is episode 44 with Stephen McBee. For Jillian Gregg, I'm Ronnie Phillips. This is the Papa Ron Podcast.
You've been listening to the Papa Ron Podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, hit subscribe now on the podcast platform. Follow the Papa Ron Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok.
And while you're there, like, comment, and share.
Until Until next time, thanks for listening to the Papa Ron Podcast. Papa Ron Podcast. Papa Ron Podcast.